Today on Annenberg Radio News.
It was the first demonstration I'd ever been at. I didn't know it was the Iowa Dream speech.
We remember a man who changed civil rights forever. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, April 4th, 2013. I'm Omar Shamoot. Today, the Asian Pacific American Labor Alliance LA and the Southeast Asian Community Alliance announced the filing of a lawsuit against the city of LA for the proposed Walmart in Chinatown, Nicolette Collegian reports.
Walmart hopes to put a new store at Cesar Chavez and Grand Avenues in Chinatown. The city has given the retailer the permits it needs, but a coalition of community groups has been challenging the project for over a year. Gideon Krakoff, the lawyer for the plaintiffs in the case, hopes that filing the lawsuit will give the community a voice and halt development plans.
The goal when filing the lawsuit is for the court to say that these permits should not have been issued without this hearing beforehand. So what we're asking the court to do is to invalidate the permits, send it back to the city to have the hearing, and then after that whole process, see what happens.
Community activist Aiha Nguyen says Chinatown business owners and Walmart are held to different standards.
These are families that scrape by and struggle to make a living, and they do so not speaking a lot of English, and yet are still expected to follow all the rules and procedures that the city sets aside. And yet, when Walmart got their permits, and did not have to follow all the rules, that was a slap to their face.
Nguyen and other Chinatown residents don't think Walmart is a good fit for their neighborhood. Sharon Lee is a Chinese immigrant and a loyal customer of small businesses in Chinatown.
From an immigrant perspective, I feel like the small business mean a lot to them. So if it's closed down because of the large corporation, like compete with this business, so I feel really pretty and really sad for them.
Walmart has been criticized by labor groups.
Walmart is not a good employer. Walmart is not a good neighbor. Walmart will not be good for Chinatown.
Martha Sellers is a cashier at the Paramount Walmart. She's been there for 9 years.
It would create jobs, yes, but they're all going to be poverty jobs. They're going to be in the same boat I am. You can hardly pay your rent.
Walmart didn't respond to a request for comment. Krakoff says it could be close to a year before any progress is seen. Nicolette Collegian, Annenberg Radio News.
This Sunday is Holocaust Remembrance Day in commemoration of the millions of people who died under the Nazis during World War II. Two survivors of the Holocaust visited USC to tell their stories. Katie Lyons brings us this report.
As students and survivors ate lunch, I spoke with several survivors who were able to share their memories of the Holocaust. One survivor, George McKay, was born in Amsterdam in 1942, and fled with his family to Switzerland when he was just 8 months old.
And I was carried in a bag, and this black bag became infamous, if you will, because a black bag was fashioned in order to be able to hide me as a baby. And that bag made it to Switzerland with me in it, and it now is on display in the LA Museum of the Holocaust.
McKay is now a board member for the LA Museum of the Holocaust. Henry Slucky, a professor of clinical psychology at USC, was separated from his parents for several years.
And I came to the United States and lived with my maternal great uncle and great aunt in New York City, and my parents eventually rejoined me in 1946, in April 46.
Slucky always remained hopeful that his parents would return.
I acquired from them an attitude of optimism, so I always felt that things were going to work out. And they did, for us at least.
The luncheon was sponsored by the USC Shoah Foundation and USC Hillel. Katie Lyons, Annenberg Radio News.
Stray animals in South Los Angeles can now call a state-of-the-art animal shelter home. But as Claire Pyres reports, the shelter hopes they won't have to stay for long.
As I left Western Avenue with its jagged street and boarded stores, I came to a modern oasis for animals. Decorated with local artwork and gardens, 258 kennels are lined in South LA's new animal shelter. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa was there today for the opening.
When a stray pit bull is found wandering in the middle of a busy street, or when a box of kittens have been mercilessly left in a parking lot, they'll be able to find safety and comfort in the 258 kennels and two cat rooms of the South LA Animal Shelter.
This impound shelter is the second biggest in LA. Shelter director Jan Selder says this is a full-service facility.
You can bring your dog in for microchipping. We will have a spay-neuter clinic. We offer adoptions, of course, every day, advice. So we just want this to service the community in a complete way that the community needs.
LA Animal Services says 26 to 44,000 dogs wander the streets of LA. Employee Crystal Shakoon sees these animals often.
Just the other day, I was at the pools and I saw two stray animals running across the street. And working for the city, I know what the numbers are. So I really just hope that we can improve upon our statistic.
The Chesterfield Square facility is an energy-efficient building. Architect Rania Alomar explains how their concept was to keep the building open to the outside.
You really don't go inside that much. It's mostly an outdoor facility, which is great for the kennels because there's no odors. Sound can be mitigated more easily.
You can buy a dog for $83 and a cat for $50. Shelter director Selder feels this shelter is the only way to help save these animals.
And this is my way of helping the animals that don't really have a voice for themselves.
But they're hoping each dog will soon be adopted by a loving family and enter a new home. Claire Pyres, Annenberg Radio News.
South Los Angeles is a community starved of healthcare resources. This morning marked the unveiling of a new wellness center and clinic at Washington Preparatory High School. Lauren Jones has the story.
Free dental, physical, and mental care is now within walking distance for many residents in South Los Angeles.
I believe that the physical and mental services would be the most used.
That's Jacqueline Zendejas, a senior at Washington Preparatory High School, aspiring to pursue a career in the medical field.
Students, whether they like it or not, they need to get things off their chest, and sometimes they wouldn't consider their friends the best option because they don't know if one day they won't be there anymore or they'll go tell other people.
Community member Kenneth Jones came out to lend his support.
There should be nobody suffering at home because they have a lack of medical attention or transportation.
This center not only focuses on physical health, but has an emphasis on people's mental state as well.
For many years, post-traumatic stress disorder has been overlooked. It's only been applied to the U.S. veterans. But in actuality, the children that grew up in gang-infested communities are on a post-traumatic stress disorder. Maybe they've seen somebody die, seen somebody get beat up, seen a lot of violence.
This clinic will now be a place for these children and the community at large to get the help they need.
And we never had a clinic where they can go in and express themselves, because a lot of people can't relate to gang violence, even if they even never participated. But I grew up and I lived on the street with 14 boys, and then one day when you get 45, you look up again and it's only two people still left standing.
This string of 12 clinics is only the beginning. In January of 2014, Obamacare will create many more opportunities like this in underserved communities. Lauren Jones, Annenberg, Radio News.
If you're headed to the Los Angeles Beer Festival at Paramount Studios this weekend, you're in luck. The forecast calls for highs in the low to mid-70s and partly cloudy skies. But first, tonight should welcome clear skies with a low of 56. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we take a look at Tyler Perry's new film, Temptation. Students at a Georgia high school are taking prom into their own hands. They want the freedom for black and white students to attend together. Wilcox County High School, outside of Macon, has always held two proms, one for whites and one for what they term colored people. Now, a multiracial group of students is pushing for integration. They're holding an unfunded prom off school grounds, and they're fundraising on a Facebook page called Integrated Prom. Today, we remember a man who gave his life fighting for racial equality. It's been 45 years since Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated, and producer Aaron Trank takes a look at what his legacy means today.
People around the world today mourn the loss of Dr. King. But King's words and ideas remain a part of many lives.
Well, every time we do something good, every single act that has purpose, that elevates the quality of life, it reminds us that Dr. King did not die in vain.
After all this time has passed, how is King remembered by most Americans? Dr. Claiborne Carson is a Stanford history professor and the founding director of the Martin Luther King Research and Education Institute there. He says the impact of King's life isn't fully appreciated.
I don't think it's fully appreciated. I think that he's often put in the category of African-American civil rights leader, but I think that's kind of like saying that Gandhi was an Indian independence fighter.
King's activism was bigger than just the struggles of African-Americans in the U.S. He had a sense of the global dimension of the freedom struggle, Carson says, a struggle that continues around the world today.
You know, I think that King played a role in defining it in those broad terms of, you know, how do we on a worldwide scale transform peasants and the descendants of peasants into citizens?
Carson's journey with King began in 1963, when he was in the crowd for the famed "I Have a Dream" speech in Washington.
We'll one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
It was the first demonstration I'd ever been at. Now, for me, it was the concluding speech of a long day of speeches. I didn't know it was the "I Have a Dream" speech. It didn't have a name. It was just King's concluding speech.
King's legacy inspires causes of all kinds today. Right now, his assassination is being marked in Memphis, the city where he was killed, with a labor union rally. And in his hometown of Atlanta, with the launch of a campaign against youth violence. Aaron Schrank, Annenberg Radio News.
The last year of high school can be exciting, but even for the brightest students, it can be lonely. Today in our Graduation Day LA series, reporter Leah Bailey introduces us to Kenzie Givens. She's a straight-A high school senior who uses poetry to navigate questions of race and isolation.
Give it up for Kenzie Givens!
On a chilly night in South LA, over 100 young people have packed into this small theater for an open mic poetry reading. Kenzie Givens is a 17-year-old African-American poet, and tonight is her first time reading here.
I would be lying to you if I said I was afraid of death. I crave life, and in doing so, crave death.
On stage, Kenzie looks tough. She's dressed in a leather jacket, miniskirt, and combat boots, and her hair is done up in dreads. Despite her confidence on stage, Kenzie doesn't always fit in. She writes poetry because she can't always connect with other students her age.
When I'm at school, I'm usually pretty shy. I have this little place where I sit off. It's actually behind this little shrubbery thing, and that's usually where I go when I eat my lunch. And if I am around people, my head tends to be in a book.
Kenzie doesn't go to school in her own African-American neighborhood. In the third grade, her parents chose to start sending her to charter schools in mostly white, wealthy neighborhoods. She felt like an outsider from an early age.
I tried to make friends with people, and I tried to, like, ingratiate myself into different groups and stuff, but again, I found out that, you know, in order to do that, I'd have to be someone who I was not, and that didn't really appeal to me, and so I just kind of decided to be stubborn and stick it out alone.
Kenzie's neighborhood in South LA is over 70% African American. On the doors, signs read "Black owned" and "Support the hood." Caroline, Kenzie's mother, admits it wasn't easy sending her away.
I would have liked her to have more African-American friends as well, which I think she doesn't have as many. Does she have any? I don't think she has any. No.
I'm certain there's, you know, someone at my school that I could have really great conversations with, but I usually am so focused on my books and exploring, you know, topics on my own that I don't really get to talk about it with anyone. Like, I've never had a boyfriend, or maybe my boyfriend has been a book, I'm not sure.
So are you lonely?
A little, but it's not forever, so. Because there's college.
In the meantime, Kenzie started a poetry club at her high school to connect with other poets. During a drizzly lunch period, four teenagers assemble in a classroom to read their poems.
I wrote this poem called English Summer Rain. It's based on...
There are no notebooks here, no scribbled journals. The students write and read their poems from their cell phone screens, their fingers scrolling their words.
One that passed away recently. Who are we but our scars?
I'm here trapped in this dark cave, unable to say anything.
This is a poem about war.
I write, I suppose, what feels most real at any moment. It can be any kind of experience that is so moving that it demands to be written down. I think my biggest fear is probably a very common one, and that is of disappearing entirely. I'd like to know that I mattered.
On the night of her first reading, Kenzie's nervousness melts away.
And pure, I want something pure.
She looks grounded, confident about her future. Next year, she's heading to Reed College in Portland, where she's secured early admission and a scholarship. Meanwhile, here in this crowded theater full of poets and performance artists, she's no outsider. On stage, Kenzie Givens is at home.
I want something pure. I would be lying to you if I said I was afraid of life.
Leah Bailey, Annenberg Radio News.
The New York Times reported this week that diagnoses of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in children have gone up dramatically over the last decade. The newspaper found that ADHD climbed 41% in children between the ages of 4 and 17. One in five high school age boys and 11% of all children in the United States have been diagnosed. The article notes that two-thirds of people with an ADHD diagnosis have prescriptions for stimulant medication such as Ritalin or Adderall. Dr. Bruce Spring is a psychiatrist at USC. He describes the symptoms necessary to prescribe medication to an ADHD patient.
The person has significant impairment in their concentration, their ability to stay focused, their ability to remember things, their ability to stay on task, and it begins to interfere with their life.
Annual sales of ADHD drugs went up from $5 billion in 2007 to $9 billion in 2012. Those numbers might increase again starting next month, when the American Psychiatric Association broadens the definition of ADHD.
The age at which symptoms are noticed, I think, has been broadened in the new criteria. That will allow more people to be formally diagnosed with ADHD.
The New York Times data comes from a Centers for Disease Control study that surveyed 76,000 parents nationwide. Tyler Perry has a new movie called Temptation: Confessions of a Marriage Counselor. It's a story about love, money, and adultery. Jillian Baker has this review.
Tyler Perry's new movie, Temptation: Confessions of a Marriage Counselor, could have been an artistic look into the struggles of modern love. But the famed director put reality star Kim Kardashian in the flick, and that's just where Temptation's problems begin. Although Kardashian plays a minor role, Temptation is almost as ridiculous as Perry's decision to put her in the movie. Temptation tells the story of Judith, played by Journey Smollett-Bell. Judith is a Christian girl in her mid-20s and aspires to be a marriage counselor. Ironically enough, she's trapped in a passionless marriage to her oh-so-attractive, yet cowardly husband. Enter Harley, the mysterious billionaire who provides Judith with the temptation she needs to begin a romantic affair. As one would expect, Harley isn't exactly who he seems to be, and the film embarks on a muddled attempt to unwrap the many mysteries of Judith's new lover. Lost? Don't worry. Temptation's plot is so underdeveloped and predictable that it's hard to keep up with the complex storyline. Perry's characters are completely one-dimensional, despite the film's potential to explore the motivations of adultery. Yes, Temptation features a very attractive star-studded cast. Singer-actress Brandy also appears in the film as Harley's ex-wife. And Perry does use the film as a way to comment on the issue of HIV within the black community. But the positive elements of Temptation don't outweigh its ridiculousness. The drama is too constructed and frankly unbelievable to overlook. One example of Temptation's ridiculousness? Towards the end of the movie, all the main characters manage to age, except Brandy's character, whom apparently has found the fountain of youth. Too bad Perry's signature character Medea didn't pop up anywhere. It could have given Temptation a reason to be so absurd. Jillian Baker, Annenberg Radio News.
jazz students at USC do more than just beef up on Benny Goodman and Louis Armstrong. As James Santelli reports, they get creative with their own music, too.
Hi, I'm Jacob Mann. I'm originally from Las Vegas, Nevada, and I'm a jazz studies major. I've been playing the piano for about 10 years and loving it more and more.
Jacob's dad, who is a financial advisor, wasn't quite sure about his son going to school to study music. He wanted Jacob to consider a career in business.
But as time went on more and more in high school and I started getting more and more involved in music, I really didn't consider that many other things. I couldn't really see myself being happy.
Even though he's a jazz major, most of his gigs are with an R&B and soul band, fronted by singer Raquel Rodriguez. The biggest crowd they played for was 1,500 people, opening for rappers J. Cole and Big Sean at Cal State LA.
It was a lot of people, and it was kind of stressful at first. I was only a freshman at the time, so that was still when I was getting really nervous before these performances.
Jacob started writing music in high school. It's a process that can take anywhere from an hour to write an R&B song to 2 months for a jazz orchestra piece.
It's always kind of an experiment. You're experimenting with sounds and colors and just trying to see what sounds good and what doesn't. And it's always, that's, to me, is more fulfilling than playing, hearing something back that you've written. Yeah, it's a work in progress, so.
Pretty good. What's it called?
I'm not sure yet. I haven't titled it.
Do you think about the titles first and then write a song for it sometimes? Or does the title come after? Is it always coming after?
It's always different. Sometimes I come up with a title or like a theme or a mood. And then I write based on that. And then sometimes the titles and songs are completely separate things. Some of the songs I write involve like personal relationships with people. I've written some sad songs about some failed romantic conquests, I guess you could say. I have a lot of inspiration in that category.
As it does for many artists, heartbreak inspired the music.
Okay, well, this song is called At Least Not Yet. It's kind of about the complicated situation that you can get into if you're really good friends with a girl and if you want it to be something more than a friendship, but you're not sure if the other person is thinking that way. It's just kind of about that feeling.
Another one of his songs is called AM PM Confusion. The title comes from a time Jacob was playing with a musician who completely missed a rehearsal.
And then he came to the next rehearsal and he was like, "Guys, I'm so sorry that I missed, like I overslept." But he said, "But don't get mad at me because I know it's all happened to you. Like I accidentally set my alarm for PM instead of AM. Like I know it's happened to you." So it's kind of a strange apology. And so I guess that's how that tune was born.
But now there's no confusion that Jacob's heart is in writing songs and playing the piano. Even his dad, the financial advisor, is happy his son is doing what he loves. James Santelli, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with Joy Wang to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
So tonight on ATVN, we take a look at how officials managed to find the missing hikers. Our reporter Chia Davis updates us on both their conditions and gives us details about the search. CEO Mark Zuckerberg is in the news again. This time, he's introducing Facebook Home, a, quote, family of apps for Android devices. For those with an appetite, our weather anchor Eric Rubel takes us to Slater's 5050, a burger joint known for patties made of 50% beef and 50% bacon. Finally, it's Hug and Anchor Day, and we'll be celebrating that live tonight on Trojan Vision at 6 p.m.
Thanks, Troy. That's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Amen Oyiboke Osifo and Sam Weiser. Molly Gray is our producer. Our executive producer is Aaron Trank. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Omar Shamoot.